This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
My name's Donald Trump, and I'm the largest real estate developer in New York. I own buildings all over the place, model agencies, the Miss Universe pageant, jetliners, golf courses, casinos, and private resorts like Mar-a-Lago, one of the most spectacular estates anywhere in the world. But it wasn't always so easy. About 13 years ago, I was seriously in trouble. I was billions of dollars in debt. But I fought back, and I won big league. I used my brain, I used my negotiating skills, and I worked it all out. Now my company's bigger than it ever was, it's stronger than it ever was, and I'm having more fun than I ever had. I've mastered the art of the deal and have turned the name Trump into the highest quality brand. And as the master, I want to pass along my knowledge to somebody else. I'm looking for the apprentice.
This is Too Long Should Read, the show that shines a light on long reads on the internet worthy of your time. I'm Lee Chui Lin. There are lots of things that are surreal about living in 2016. Cars that drive themselves. All screens are touch screens. But something uniquely 2016 surreal is the fact that Donald Trump is running to be the Commander-in-Chief of the United States. And he might win. If you, like me, have found this state of affairs confusing and have wondered how this has happened, you're not alone. George Saunders asks, who are all these Trump supporters on NewYorker.com?
American presidential campaigns are not about ideas. They are about the selection of a hero to embody the prevailing national ethos. Mailer wrote, only a hero can capture the secret imagination of a people and so be good for the vitality of his nation. A hero embodies the fantasy and so allows each private mind the liberty to consider its fantasy and find a way to grow. Each mind can become more conscious of its desire and waste less strength in hiding from itself. What fantasy is Trump giving his supporters the liberty to consider? What secret have they been hiding from themselves?
Today I speak to a 24-year-old Trump supporter from Houston, Texas, Corey Haas, to try and understand who at least one Trump supporter is and where he's coming from.
I like the brashness. I like someone who stands up to the people who have been very demeaning to so many Americans and just, you know, calls them for what they are. Quite honestly, you know, Hillary Clinton is, I don't know if she's fit to do anything. And Barack Obama the same. Obviously, I mean, Bush and Obama have already had a try, and Obama's a useless person. He's done absolutely nothing for this country. It's only gotten worse in so many respects.
Much of what Trump says echo Corey's sentiments, which is what you'd expect to see in some ways.
There's a silent majority out there. We're tired of being pushed around, kicked around, and acting and being led by stupid people. They're stupid people.
His strategy, insulting vast swathes of America, including Mexicans.
They force people into our country, and they are drug dealers, and they are criminals of all kind. We are taking Mexico's problems.
There were a few recurring themes that came up when talking to Corey. The satisfaction with the status quo and a desire for huge and immediate change. A hatred of Hillary Clinton. And the belief that somehow Trump is being hard done by in the press. Scratch the surface and there's no small amount of anger too, something Saunders noticed in his reporting on the rallies.
Where is all this anger coming from? It's viral, and Trump is Typhoid Mary. Intellectually and emotionally weakened by years of steadily degraded public discourse, we are now two separate ideological countries, left-land and right-land. Speaking different languages, the lines between us down. Not only do our two sub-countries reason differently, they draw upon non-intersecting data sets and access entirely different mythological systems.
Corey is also quite clear on how exactly Trump is going to make these changes, which surprised me a little.
The first thing is, well, he's not Hillary Clinton. He doesn't think that the current path is the right path to go on. Right, so the first one is just that he's not the bad thing.
It isn't all just apathy towards Hillary, although we'll return to that later.
And then the second one is that just by him being elected, regardless of what he does, basically you have all of these hangers-on that are currently have spent their entire careers, their entire lives in government, and are just kind of feeding from this very large trough of, you know, enormous tax revenues. A lot of it fritters away into the pockets of consultants, contractors, overpaid government employees. These kind of hangers-on, these kind of, you know, you have Hillary Clinton's entire staff and a kind of a entire like shadow government almost employed by the Clinton Institute. And if you have this guy who doesn't respect any of that, who doesn't have poll testing, doesn't have consultants telling him what to do, lots of news articles about how lean his staff is versus how bloated Hillary's staff is. If you have this guy who doesn't respect the way things are done at all currently and who has no use for these people, then that entire inefficiency and entire kind of very bad groupthink just dies immediately.
And finally, it's the attractiveness of his policies.
Third thing, his policies are grounded so much in common sense and so much in the interests of the middle class. It's a very, very poorly thought out amalgamation of what's called like virtue signaling, which is very nice thoughts to have, but are very, very stupid in practice. And I guess an example of the virtue signaling is the continued importation of refugees from cultures extremely, extremely different from ours, which, you know, has led to bad things in Europe, where it's done much too much, and will certainly have the same effect here.
Those policies have come into question, though, with commentators picking up on his changing views and how the policies seem a little bit unclear, a little bit hazy.
We have no way of knowing which of his inconsistent views he will hold in office. Will he stand by his statement that vaccines are linked to autism? Or his belief that Mexico is sending us rapists? Oh, and what about that plan he had to defeat ISIS?
We're fighting a very politically correct war.
Yeah. Well, we see that
happening.
And
the other thing is, with the terrorists, you have to take out their families. When you get these terrorists, you have to take out their families. They care about their lives. Don't kid yourself.
Mr.
But they
Trump.
Say they don't care about their lives. You have to take out their families.
That is the front runner for the Republican nomination advocating a war crime. And he might say he was joking or he's changed his mind about any of these things. And private individuals are allowed to change their minds. We all do it. But when he's sworn in as president on January 20th, 2017, on that day, his opinions are going to matter.
For Corey, this whole idea that he needs to communicate his policies down to the last detail is flawed anyway.
How it's conventionally done is the president is elected based on some kind of expertise, some kind of policy wonkness, which for some reason is valued by whoever, someone, you know, by the consultants, by the establishment, by whoever is telling them it's valuable. But I mean, the president, one, doesn't make policy. You have the legislative branch, which does this. And two, it's not a very good quality to have a detailed understanding and a willingness to dive all the way into the weeds. It's very stupid. The president is the top executive. There is no value in having this detailed policy analysis, which is only going to hold you back. I mean, you have a fantastic example of Hillary back in the original Clinton administration, where because of she just wanted to get way too in the weeds, she totally mismanaged a healthcare overhaul. And the whole thing completely failed after months and months of just deliberations. It's half fair in that. Sure, he's going for more of an executive understanding and making executive-level decisions than getting into the weeds, which I think is right. But it's also half unfair in that his policies are very well detailed, and they're sitting on his website. They're quite clear as day. They're short, but again, it's an executive level. But they're there. It's quite clear.
He's right. The positions and policy outlines are on Trump's website, donaldjtrump.com. He's also right that they're not super detailed, and I would also say that they haven't exactly been communicated particularly well by Trump in public. And that's because he's used his public communications to say things like this.
Do you think Islam is at war with the West?
I think Islam hates us. There's something there that there's a tremendous hatred there. There's a tremendous hatred. We have to get to the bottom of it. There is an unbelievable hatred of us.
In Islam itself?
You're going to have to figure that out, okay? You'll get another Pulitzer, right? But you're going to have to figure that out. But there is a tremendous hatred. And we have to be very vigilant. We have to be very careful. And we can't allow people coming into this country who have this hatred of the United States.
I guess the question
is... And of people that are not Muslim.
Up next, what a Trump supporter makes of his public persona. This is Too Long, Should Read, BFM 89.9.
Remember, and most people don't know this, the Republican Party is the... Right? You know what I'm going to say. Right? The Republican Party is the party of Abraham Lincoln. Not bad. Not bad. It's also the party of freedom, equality, and opportunity. People have forgotten it so long now. It is the Democratic Party that is the party of slavery, the party of Jim Crow, and the party of opposition.
You are listening to Too Long Should Read. I'm Lee Chui Lin. Our show today is focused on trying to answer the question posed by George Saunders in his piece in The New Yorker, who are all these Trump supporters? I can't speak for who they all are. Just for my guest today, a Trump supporter living in Houston, Corey Haas. The thing that I find hardest to reconcile is how Trump supporters can look past the things he says that just seem so deeply offensive, so wrong, both factually and politically. I'm not alone in this, as Saunders writes.
It's clear enough to those of us who don't like Trump why we don't like him. What isn't clear is why it isn't clear to those who like him. The Trump supporter is your brother who has just brought home a wildly inappropriate fiancé. Well, inappropriate to you. Trump support, nationwide, stands at around 40%. If you had 10 siblings and 4 of them brought home wildly inappropriate fiancés, you might feel inclined to ask yourself what was going on in your family to make your judgment and that of your siblings so divergent.
I asked Corey how he felt about Trump's public persona, which to me is abrasive and difficult.
Understood. Sure. So, I mean, let's say there's nothing that I don't like about it. And I think a lot of it is that you have to be very tough as a Republican or as someone who's going against so many of these things that are so deeply and importantly held by the media. You have to be very, very tough with the media because, I mean, they're completely unfair and completely abrasive to him as well. It's quite funny. CNN is just doing a 24-hour circus of trying to, you know, finally put the nail in the coffin. You know, will this finally be the event that gets him? Personally, I absolutely love it. It's very creative. I like the spirit so much. And let's say there's some points where I'm like, oh, this is quite crazy. But you forgive him for the 10% of the times when he goes too far, because the fact of the matter is that no one at all has been saying these things which need to be said, at least of the opinion of so many of the people in the United States. And it's just not being said because so much of the political establishment, business establishment, media establishment, I mean, whatever you want to call it, is very single-minded and has very, very narrow bounds of what you can even discuss. And to have someone who is literally a candidate of a mainstream party is extremely, extremely refreshing.
I pushed Corey a little on two things that I'd found unconscionable. First, the infamous wall.
Are you ready? Are you ready? We will build a great wall along the southern border. And Mexico will pay for the wall.
Does Corey agree with the whole concept of the Great Wall of the Southern Border?
Mostly. What he's going for there, and what I like that he's going for there, is kind of some kind of anchoring where you propose the maximalist position to move others closer to what the true thing that you actually want is. To me, I also like it very much because it's very simple solutions to problems that everyone is saying are too complicated to solve. You know, supposed to be the problems of our world and solvable things. I mean, which is totally baseless. The fact of the matter is, people are saying that it's impossible to solve the issue of immigration or legal immigration. But I mean, the fact of the matter is, of course, if you do build the wall, it will be solved. It's a common sense can-do approach. I mean, that's American culture, right? And the same thing with issues of terrorism coming from refugees. You have a very common sense, a very easy solution. And I think he's modified it so that it's countries with a history of terrorism. Of course, those two criteria are going to line up quite well. This is what he's concerned about. This is what America's concerned about, too. And we're told again and again and again that, you know, this is too big to solve, or we can't solve it. Or the crazy people, who happen to also be the people in power, are saying we need to accelerate the problem and turn a blind eye to illegal immigration, or import even more refugees who we can't vet from places we know are very dangerous, from cultures who are very much unlike our own. And the same kinds of people who are causing, you know, massive violence in other countries. It's the opposite of common sense. It's the exact thing you shouldn't do.
The wall keeps outsiders out, or at least it's meant to. But what about the people you think of as outsiders who are already in? And not just in, but becoming heroes of your country. Donald Trump's treatment of the Khan family, who'd lost their son, Captain Humayun Khan, in Iraq, made headlines.
Tonight we are honored to stand here as parents of Captain Humayun Khan and as patriotic American Muslims.
It was what Khizr Khan said next that caused Donald Trump to respond.
Donald Trump, you're asking Americans to trust you with their future. Let me ask you, have you even read the United States Constitution? I will gladly lend you my copy. In this document, look for the words liberty and equal protection of law. Have you ever been to Arlington Cemetery? Go look at the graves of brave patriots who died defending United States of America. You will see all faiths, genders, and ethnicities. You have sacrificed nothing, and no one we cannot solve our problems by building walls.
He doesn't know that. I saw him. He was, very emotional and probably looked like a nice guy to me. His wife, if you look at his wife, she was standing there. She had nothing to say. She wasn't allowed to have anything to say, you tell me, but plenty of people have written that. She was extremely quiet, and it looked like she had nothing to say. A lot of people have said that, and personally, I watched him. I wish him the best of luck.
He said you have sacrificed nothing and no one.
Well, that sounds... who wrote that? Did Hillary's scriptwriters write it?
How would you answer that, Father? What sacrifice have you made for your country?
I think I've made a lot of sacrifices. I work very, very hard. I've created thousands and thousands of jobs, tens of thousands of jobs.
And just like the wall, Corey sees no problem with Donald Trump's response to that incident.
I mean, this is obviously a cheap political ploy used by Hillary as well. And I mean, to be fair, it was used by Trump, correct? I mean, you have the... I believe it was the mother of one of the Benghazi Marines or something who was speaking at the RNC and, you know, kind of did more or less the same thing.
My name is Patricia Smith. My son, Sean, was one of four brave Americans killed during the 2012 terrorist attack at Benghazi. Sean was a wonderful son and father to my two amazing grandchildren, Samantha and Nathan, now 10 and 11. He was proud to serve his country with the United States Foreign Service. The last time I talked to Sean, the night before the terrorist attack, he told me, Mom, I am going to die. All security had been pulled from the embassy, he explained. And when he asked why, he never received a response. Nobody listened. Nobody seemed to care. The very next day, he was murdered by radical Islamic terrorists. For all of this loss, for all of this grief, for all of the cynicism the tragedy in Benghazi has brought upon America, I blame Hillary Clinton.
Of course, that was not reported in the media at all. So to me, the first thing that strikes me is a cheap, stupid political ploy. I mean, you have, you know, Mr. Khan, the younger one, who I believe was killed in Iraq, or was it Afghanistan, 6 years ago, something like this, quite long ago. And so to trot him out 7 years later or something like this, and I've been holding this story back, and now it's relevant to impugn Donald Trump based on the Constitution. I don't know what has much to do with the Constitution at all. I mean, there's certainly nothing in the Constitution about immigration laws. It's the point at which it was disgusting to me. No, it really wasn't. I mean, watching the video as well, of course, it strikes you as to why, you know, his wife is just kind of standing there. And I mean, to be very fair, you know, obviously afterwards, you know, she spoke out and whatever, but is it not a fair question to ask? Is that not something that we're all concerned about as Americans, that these cultures can be very different from ours and not respect the things that we think are fundamental to our society? No, I think it's an absolutely fair question. And then, you know, of course, when it was finally dug into, you find that Mr. Khan Sr., you know, was kind of involved in kind of being a lawyer for Sharia law or some kind of academic papers on Sharia law, but, you know, quite clearly being A-okay with it. And that certainly is concerning to me as an American. I think it's very concerning to all Americans. It's not, we don't want like a parallel system, and we don't want that to replace it. I mean, quite personally, I don't think that anyone who thinks that religious codes of laws are okay should be given a platform by a major political party.
While Corey might not have had any issue with either the wall or the handling of the Gold Star family, that's not to say that he agrees with everything Trump says and does, or that there's a kind of herd uniformity amongst Trump supporters.
I didn't meet many people who were unreservedly for Trump. There is in the quiver containing his ideas something for nearly everyone to dislike, but there is also something for nearly everyone to like. What allows a person not crazy about Trump to vote for him is a certain prioritization. A person might, for example, like Trump's ideas about trade, or his immigration policies, or the fact that Trump is, as one supporter told me, a successful businessman who has actually done something, unlike Obama, who has never done anything his entire life.
I asked Corey if he ever needed to do that prioritization, if anything would cause him to change his mind about how he plans to vote.
I'm quite firm that I understand, let's say, the ethos of Hillary Clinton and the ethos of Donald Trump, unless I've misunderstood it or unless they've deliberately masqueraded as something they're not. Then, no. Hillary Clinton is an extremely corrupt person who embodies everything that's wrong with this country and every single thing she's touched, from being a senator, from being a first lady, from being a secretary of state, a very sad career of just complete and utter incompetence and corruption and failure at everything she touches. That's her ethos to me. To Donald Trump, I'm not saying he's the opposite. I'm not completely enamored by the guy. He's kind of just a useful vehicle. But certainly, he's a man who is not afraid to speak his mind, clearly has executive experience, and that's exactly what you need.
In the article, Saunders describes an America more divided than before, and I kept thinking about how each side seems to think the other is punking them. It feels like Hillary and Trump supporters are just staring at each other incredulously across a divide, asking one another, seriously, is that your candidate?
I'm sure if he came over here and asked around on the street, I think much fewer people than are actually polled would tell you that they're planning on voting for him, and they like him. I think they know that they'll be treated badly. Quite a brilliant example, actually, is me and a friend were in San Francisco not too long ago, and we had happened to come upon one of the, you know, classic Trump hats, and he was walking around in San Francisco, which is probably the worst city you could ever imagine walking around with it in. But yeah, people were just saying, "Fuck you," just right to his face. "Yeah, fuck you, what the fuck do you think you're doing? Are you serious?" Which is crazy. You know, I mean, this is someone who, at any given time, about half of America or half of America who plans on voting supports. And that's the absolute disdain that one culture of the United States has for another culture. And it's crazy, and it's very sad to see.
In closing, I wanted to know what Corey's hopes were for an America led by Trump.
Excellent. Excellent question.
He was silent for a long time here, by the way. I was worried the line had dropped.
I think I would want a much more opportunistic economy, a much more inclusive and positive culture, and a much smarter foreign diplomacy.
While Corey might be optimistic, this is how George Saunders closed his piece. "Although to me, Trump seems the very opposite of a guardian angel, I thank him for this. I've never before imagined America as fragile, as an experiment that could, within my very lifetime, fail." My guest today, Corey Haas, a Trump supporter, and the articles by George Saunders titled "Who Are All These Trump Supporters?" published on NewYorker.com. Now for our word of the week, usurpation. Used and explained in this sentence in the piece, what unites these stories is what I came to think of as usurpation anxiety syndrome, the feeling that one is or is about to be scooped, overrun, or taken advantage of by some other with questionable intentions. It is that very syndrome of usurpation anxiety that Trump is taking advantage of and that we're all prone to falling for. So, something to be vigilant against. Usurpation anxiety syndrome. That's it for the show this week. For more Too Long Should Read episodes that are a little more uplifting, perhaps, some that are even more downbeat, we cater to all tastes. Listen to the other episodes on bfm.my/too long. You are listening to BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.